Today, I'm joined by Dr. Ruth Birkebeck to explore what shaming supervision looks like and what a supervisee can do when it happens. So, Dr. Birkebeck, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, Rory. Thanks for having me here.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. And I saw your training. I went to a supervision conference recently, and you were doing training on this, and it was so impactful, not just to me, but for the rest of the delegates. And it really struck me, it's something that perhaps isn't really discussed widely in the world of counselling and psychotherapy, but something that happens maybe a little bit more than we would like to think. Would that be accurate, do you think?
I think it is, Rory, and it's probably even more frequent than we can think about, considering that when supervisees get shamed in supervision, they don't speak about. They are too vulnerable to say anything, and very often it goes unnoticed by the supervisor.
Yes, absolutely. And how would you define shame in the context of supervision? How might it present in the relationship? What examples could you give?
Okay. Let's start with the definition of shame. Yeah? That Richard Askin describes shame as a complex emotion that involves the fear of being rejected for who I am. So the core of who I am is unacceptable. Involves the sadness for not being accepted as I am. So is that belief that if when you find out about the feelings I have, the thoughts I have, or the way I behave, you are going to reject me. And shame also involves the what we call the retroflected anger, which is instead of being angry at the person who is humiliating you, you get angry at yourself. And I think that happens in supervision quite often. Yeah, if the supervisee perhaps asks a question, the supervisor may not have the answer, and the supervisee may blame himself, may blame themselves for having put the supervisor in such a difficult situation.
Yes. And yeah. I think that that aspect of someone's self-blaming is quite a powerful one, really, isn't it? Because that, I guess, may lead to someone being reluctant to engage in supervision or reluctant to bring anything up that might be connected to the topic the shaming was around.
Yeah. And the self-blame is part of that retroflected anger, which is an important element of shame. Yeah, and one thing that I note in supervision is that when we shame as a supervisor, when we shame the supervisee, and that is not repaired, the result is silence.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
So when the supervisees, and I think all of us as supervisors, we are also a supervisee at some point. Yeah, and I think about the moments when you may feel unsure about a client, you feel lost, you feel confused, and you bring that client for supervision, and your supervisor doesn't understand your vulnerability or your feelings toward the client, and may behave in a way that can be judgmental or not okay from what the client is experiencing, the result is shame.
Absolutely. And I remember part of the presentation that really, really struck me was that you experienced this yourself, I believe, in supervision. And it kind of struck me that being a medical doctor and being incredibly well qualified in one field didn't stop you from feeling shamed in another discipline. Can you just tell us a little bit about this? Because I thought this was quite striking.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you remember that aspect, that I have forgotten that I have given that example. And that's true. That was an example of how I was shamed in supervision by my supervisor's idealization of me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, a little bit of what I've just done, really. And this is, so you're a doctor, so.
Yeah, and that was different from what I was thinking about bringing here to you, Rory, and I'm glad that you remember that. Because that's another way that we can shame the supervisee. Yeah, when we idealize them to be in a certain way, and we miss the real person, we'll miss their vulnerability. And in my case, I think I was shamed because my supervisor saw me as that very academic person who was very different from my supervisor at the time, was more as she used it to describe herself, as more organic.
Yes.
And she would go with the flow. And I was more academic, had more structure to describe my clients. And how many times I felt shamed for my way of being.
Absolutely. And what struck me when you were speaking to us in that conference was that you seem to have a wonderful curiosity for the world. It comes across. I've met you on a number of occasions, but I had the pleasure of being taught by you in that session. And it seemed that your supervisor tried to attenuate your natural curiosity, and I thought that was terrible, because that's the whole point of us being therapists. We should be curious people. Yeah.
Absolutely, and I think the other aspect in supervision that can also be shaming is when we as supervisor come to from the assumption that our way of working is the right way.
Yes.
And we fail to understand that there are other ways, there are other styles of working.
Yes, that we don't imprint our kind of way of being onto our supervisees.
Yeah, and how often when we don't understand something, we assume that that's the wrong thing to do or that's the wrong way, simply because that's different from our way of doing it.
Yes, absolutely. Could you give us an example of that? Because I think that would be useful for the listener to understand that kind of dynamic. A supervisor may have, would that be in the intervention? Or would that just be in the relational approach, or would it be both?
I think that could be both. Yeah, and I think, for example, I have many supervisees, and some of them, they follow the same approach that I do, which is very easy for me. But I also have supervisees from completely different background. Yeah, I have supervisee who work in a more cognitive way, or is a more person-centered way, where they make less interventions than I usually do. And how important it is for me that I can look at their clients from the perspective and the trainings that they have had.
Yes, absolutely. And I think we sometimes forget that. It's something that's easily forgotten. Do you think there is a difference when we're working with student, emerging therapists as opposed to those who are qualified practitioners when it comes to shame?
Yes and no. Yeah, because I also have supervisees who are doing their second training or their third training. And despite them being very experienced therapists, some of them working for more than 10 years, so many years of practice, sometimes they are new in that specific area.
Mm.
And when we expect that they are going to have a lot of experience, I think that's when we can shame them, with the expectation that they should know how to do that work, when in reality, they are very new to that new approach.
Yeah, so someone who's done maybe a second training, someone who's training maybe in TA or CBT, and we think because they're qualified, they should, because they're taking a qualification, they should know it all before they've learned it, in a way.
That's right.
Yes. That's really interesting. And what do you think are the common ways that a supervisor may shame a supervisor? You gave some great examples. I wish I could take everybody to your training, to be honest, but you gave some great examples. What are the common ways or phrases that a supervisor might use that could generate shame?
Well, I always remember one supervisee telling me about his experiences with the previous supervisor who would be listening to his record and many times saying, "Oh my God, why did you say that? What the hell did you have in your mind?"
Oh, gosh.
And that's very shaming.
Yes, and I remember you giving that example at the seminar I attended, and you could hear the people certainly sat around me giving a real sharp intake of breath at that story.
Yes. I think the other times when supervisor can be unintentionally shaming is, for example, I remember the times when I was asked the questions in supervision and I didn't know the answer.
Yes.
That can be shaming.
Yes.
Yeah. As a supervisor, we should know everything. There is that belief from the supervisee that we always know everything. We always have the answer to this or to that. And I remember the times when I was asked questions that I didn't have the answer. And that can be shaming. And I think the problem is how often or quite often supervisors may try to cover up for their own shame, their own sense of inadequacy by providing that arrogant position or their own self-righteousness, trying to give a sort of answer to that question, which is not going to be the most appropriate one.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think when the supervisor fails to acknowledge their own shame, that's going to be shaming for the client.
Absolutely. And what you talk about is hubris, really, isn't it? Where the supervisor doesn't want to be seen as not the all-knowing, all-seeing eye,
yes,
and either becomes defensive or just makes something up.
Yeah.
So they don't feel like they're not the great all-seeing eye.
Yeah.
If a supervisee kind of begins to feel shamed or unsafe in supervision, what steps can they take to address this without jeopardizing the relationship?
I would like to say to you, Rory, that this should be the responsibility of the supervisor.
Ah.
Yeah, just like when shame happens in therapy. It's not the responsibility of the client to say to the therapist, "You shamed me." But I think it's the responsibility of the therapist to be attuned to the client and to note when the client is shamed. And to repair that.
Yes. So
it's a thought that I always have in my mind, how I may possibly be shaming my client or my supervisee.
I think that's interesting. Going in with intention to think about how you're going to interact with your supervisee and by default, I guess, the client. And making sure that your words and your actions are considered enough not to shame. In other words, starting from that position.
Yeah. Because one thing that we know is that shame originates in relationship. Yeah, shame is an emotion that results from the humiliating behavior from somebody else, the critical behavior from that person. But over time, shame becomes internalized. And the person can feel shame even when they are locked in their room alone. Yeah, the anticipation of going to that place can be shaming.
Yes. And I don't think we could really discuss any human interaction without talking about transference. Of course, it's possible, isn't it, that the supervisee may play out a different relationship with the supervisor and vice versa. And how do we become aware of that, do you think? If you're a supervisor and you realise the supervisee is maybe playing out a relationship that is something from their past, how would you address that?
The first thought that comes from my mind when you talk about the transference, I think about the power and authority that can be transferred to the supervisor.
Oh.
Yeah. And unconsciously, the supervisee projects that idealization of the supervisor is big, is wonderful, knows everything, and how shaming that can be, independent on what the supervisor is doing or saying.
Absolutely.
Just that fantasy can trigger the shame.
Yes. And we may recognise that. I mean, there's times when I've worked with supervisees and it's become clear that they're seeing me as someone from their past, maybe a teacher or maybe someone they've had a relationship with. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what your view is, but I always like to speak that out and be very curious. Say, you know, I noticed that you look uncomfortable. I wonder if maybe I remind you of someone or is there anything that I'm doing? And try to, as you would a client, try to see what's going on and open that, make an invitation.
Yeah, and another aspect that I find important in supervision is that I am only sharing my therapeutic mistakes.
Ah, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. So I think by showing my vulnerability to my supervisee, I open the space for them to be vulnerable.
Yes.
Yeah. So if I can make mistakes, this is how to repair. This is how I repair this. And I think this can be so powerful because it gives them the permission to talk about their own mistakes without the shame that they are going to be criticized or judged as not being good enough.
Absolutely. And I also think it speaks to reducing the power dynamic. If you could speak about being, and I'm going to use the term within the context of our conversation, flawed, then it's okay for them. You know, I'm a human and nothing human is alien to me. We all make mistakes.
This is the mistake I've made. This is what I've learned. This is how I repair. And this is what I've learned from that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all may say things. I'm going to speak for myself. Sometimes I say things that may land on somebody, not as I intended, but they've interpreted as that. So what can a supervisor do if they realise they've unintentionally shamed a supervisee?
Talk about it.
Yes.
Talk about it at the time when it happens. And sometimes I say, I think I have shamed you here. Let's talk about it. When I note that they are talking about the client and suddenly they change and they talk about something else or they start looking away, these are the moments when I wonder if I have shamed them.
Yes, so we're talking about attunement.
Yes.
Very much attuning and the quality of the relationship. We spend a lot of time talking about the quality of the relationship in therapy. And I wonder if we spend enough time in training programs talking about the quality of the relationship in supervision.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, I'd agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's as significant as it is in therapy. Because it's that quality of the supervisory relationship that is going to help the trainee, the supervisee, to grow or not to grow.
Absolutely. So as we come to the end of our time together, What if there's a supervisor or a supervisee listening to this and wondering, I wonder if I do that, or I wonder if I am the recipient of shame, what observations would you have to give, first of all, to the supervisor?
To the supervisor, think about shame, because it's inevitable, it will happen. And if you miss it, the supervisee is probably not going to bring that client again, or will not talk about their feelings again, with the fear of being judged or criticized.
Yes. And what about the supervisees who are listening to this thinking, actually, that happens in my supervision?
Well, for the supervisees, that goes with that challenge, Rory, that I think it should be the responsibility of the supervisor. Mm. Yeah. And because when the supervisee gets shamed, it's impossible to talk about their own vulnerability unless that relationship is a safe one.
Yes.
If it's a safe one, they can talk about.
Yes. And I guess that replicates the client-therapist relationship. A client may not say, I felt shamed in therapy.
Yeah, that's right.
I have to say that I'm as inspired by our conversation today as I was sitting in the lecture that you gave. I think this is a wonderful way of thinking if you're a supervisor. And I hope that those who are supervisees and those who are supervisors who listen may take the opportunity to do a period of reflection and wonder, you know, am I shamed or do I shame if it's supervisor, and what can be done about it. So, Dr. Ruth Birkebeck, thank you so much